little bit, not an, it's not fair to call it an off week, because Dave, you got victimized a little bit by what transpired with Tua on Thursday night. Then you, it looked like you were going to claw your way to a 5-4, but you had to settle for a 4-5. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I wasn't sure what, I can't remember what all I gave out last week, but yeah, it was, in the paper, I think I went, 7-8-1. Seven, eight, and one.
All right.
That's what happens, you know. It's all very close to even, but I have not hit a Thursday game yet. I don't know why I'm cursed for these Thursday night games.
Interesting. That's interesting. I've got all your, I've got everything in front of me, actually. And I mean that the person that was cursed was Tua by.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, yeah. What can you say about it? You know.
Well, I think we talked about it last week, and I think I said last week that he shouldn't play. And, you know, that it clearly looked like he was concussed the week before. So, and what do I know about it? So, if like dopes like me watching TV can say, can sort of eyeball it and say, I don't think that guy should be playing football next week. You know what I mean? I think it's reprehensible that, the concussion protocols to me just don't seem to be equally applied to all players. You know, linebackers, tackles, you know, get put in concussion protocols and have to sit games out. But when it's a starting quarterback, I feel like they, you know, they're much quicker to try to get him back out on the field, and I think we see the result of that.
Let's we're a little bit short this week on time, so let's dive in, and might as well start with the Thursday. I've got this week's piece. I'll tweet it in a couple of minutes, but tonight's week five action starts with Indianapolis visiting Denver.
Yeah, tough game to pick. I'm not excited about picking this one. I think that Denver wins this game, but I think they're going to win it around the margin of the spread. So, you know, it could go either way. Right now you're getting 3 at some places, 3 and a hook at other places. So depending, you know, that means that their true number's somewhere around the middle of that. I mean, I think this is one where whatever team you like, try to find the better number. If you like, you know, the Broncos, try to find a shop with a cheap 3 and, or even better, an even cheaper 3.5. This is an interesting point. I don't know if we talked about this before, but, you know, right now at DraftKings, you can get Denver minus 3.5 at plus 105. And minus 3.5 at plus 105 is actually a better bet.
Lost it for a second, Dave.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
So I don't know if you heard what I was saying, but
you started about the numbers
on this game. I think an interesting sort of gambling lesson here is that you may, if you like Denver, you may think, well, I'm going to take Denver minus 3, because you can get Denver minus 3 at places like PointsBet right now, but PointsBet has Denver minus 3 at minus 115. But DraftKings has Denver minus 3.5 at plus 105. That's a much better bet to lay the 3.5 at plus 105 than laying the 3 at minus 115. So just some interesting kind of, you know, it's I don't think most gamblers think about that. I think they just try to get the most points they can get without looking at price. So, but then on the other side with the Colts, you know, if you can find plus 3 at plus, you know, at a plus number like plus 105, which some shops have, that's much better than taking plus 3.5 at DraftKings, where it's shaded minus 125. So DraftKings is clearly keeping the hook on the 3, but they're, you know, they're shading the number to track money on Denver, which kind of shows the sharp side here. So it's a tough game. I don't know. I picked Denver in the paper. I don't know that I am going to bet this game because I feel like it's too close.
You wrote, in fact, the piece that that's in the Times today, you talk about the underdogs performing well, and you've actually, you know, really kind of focused on some of these home dogs. Every week we seem to be talking about them, Dave, and you've had a nice, I haven't done the totals, but it feels like you're ahead even on the outright wins with home dogs. How does that scene shift this week?
Well, yeah, I think that I'm continuing to like some of the underdogs this week, but not exclusively. I do think that the numbers are tightening up a bit here, but yeah, this season so far, underdogs are doing well, so that says something about how these lines are getting priced and how these teams are outperforming what the market expects from them. But I do think that there are some really interesting, there continue to be some interesting underdog propositions. I think this week a good outright bet would be to bet on Detroit. I think Detroit can win this game. Right now, Detroit are getting 3.5 at FanDuel, and I think they're going to win the game outright. So, you know, New England got potentially has a third string quarterback playing for them this week. So, you know, you're talking about the best offense in the NFL with the Lions. Of course, they also have the worst defense in the NFL. So they're, that sort of put them maybe squarely in the middle of the pack because of that discrepancy. But I just think that the Patriots are going to struggle with their string quarterback. I think it's just too big of a drop-off for them to win against this team. They're going to have to put up tons of points to keep up with Detroit, and I think they're going to be figuring out, building the airplane in the air, as they say. So I think the Lions are a good underdog to bet outright. And I also like Arizona. I don't like them outright. I think they lose the game. But they're underdogs at home against your Philadelphia Eagles. I don't think Arizona wins the game. But they're getting 5.5 points. And, you know, the secret, the trick to covering against Philadelphia is that, you know, Philly scores all their points in the first half. I mean, they've been outscored right this season in the second half, 66-37. So clearly what they do is they run up a big score, and then they're really good at chewing the clock in the second half and escaping, you know, getting out with the win. So, that, you know, you can backdoor cover against that team. And I think what we'll see is Arizona fall behind and then, you know, in garbage time put some drives together. And, you know, we could see a backdoor cover, especially since they're getting 5.5. So at home, getting those points, I think Arizona's a good bet to potentially backdoor cover against Philly in garbage time here.
Well, other than the Eagles beating the Chicago Cardinals in the 40s in the championship game, my father, for my entire lifetime, has always maintained that the Eagles have performed poorly against the Bidwell family in all three versions with the Redbird, Chicago, St. Louis, and now Arizona, and they're banged up. I mean, we don't know if, from the kicking side, you know, not that the offensive line for the Birds doesn't shore up no matter who comes in, but they're a little nicked up coming out of that game on Sunday. So there is reason to I won't argue with you taking the card and 5.5.
Yeah, I don't think Arizona wins. I mean, you know, I'd be surprised if they win. But look, Philadelphia is going to regress to the mean at some point. You know, they're like all NFL teams do. So I don't know if it'll be this week or another week. But I think, yeah, Philadelphia has to slow down. They're going to lose a game eventually. I don't know which one it'll be. I don't think it'll be this week. But Philadelphia's been performing much better than what I think their power ratings say they should be performing, and that's why I think at some point you don't adjust the power rating up every time they have a great game. You know expect that at some point they're going to, you know, over the course of the season, they're going to regress to the mean. Some people, I think, tend to react and have this recency bias where there's a good game, so they want to, you know, they want to jack all their, you know, power ratings based on what they saw that week, or bring them down if a team had a bad game, and not trust, you know, trust the data or trust the numbers. But you know, I think here we'll see that Philadelphia will continue to do well, but will play more closely to what I think they should be playing at some point. This ain't the week. I just like Arizona because I think they're getting a lot of points at home. I think Arizona is going to do, like I said, they're going to put together some interesting garbage time drives, which we've seen them do this season a few times.
Speaking of big numbers at home, Carolina, a 6.5-point home dog against the Niners. The Niners actually kind of fit into a few conversation points that have come up now this first month of the season, including the quarterback scenario and with Garoppolo pressed, you know, back into service. Given 6.5, I don't know. This feels inviting looking at the Panthers.
Yeah, I'd take the points here. And I think it's a good one, too. I mean, San Francisco had a great game. And, again, there's a tendency to want to see that game as a, you know, I mean, they went up one side of Rams and down the other, and I think that's, there's a tendency to want to walk away from that and think this team is going back to the Super Bowl. But I thumped the brakes on that. They've got probably the best defense in the NFL. But their offense is struggling, and, you know, other than their passer rating, I think their scoring efficiency is off. They're not putting up tons of points. I versus Carolina, who are not a great team, but are, you know, at least I think if you give Carolina these points at home, they should cover. I think that if they're going to lose at home to the Niners, they're not going to get blown out. They may lose by a field goal here. So you're getting plenty of points. I say take them. I think the 49ers are not always going to perform like we just saw them perform. It's similar to what I said about Philadelphia, and you know, I just don't think that their offense is as good as they were able to be against the Rams.
We've got another Sunday morning game, and this one involves one of the New York teams. The Giants and the Packers go to London, and the Giants are getting 8.5. Surprising enough, Giants 3-1 along with the Pack. And let's also talk about the other team in New York, Jets, 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 Jets. Miami comes to town. They play famously. They invariably play shootouts, and it's always a Texas death match with the Dolphins and the Jets. And the Jets are getting 3.5 at home. What's the play for the New Yorkers? Both New Yorkers.
You know, I picked the Giants with 8 points. Now you can get 8.5 some places. But strangely enough, you know, Pinnacle, which I think is one of the sharpest offshore books for the NFL. I mean, this is a book that does lots of heavy business on the NFL. With you know, they take big bets in the NFL. You know, they've moved the line to 7.5. I think that. So right now you can find across the market anything from 7.5 to 8.5, so like a full point spread between the different lines. It's interesting to me. Something's happening here. I don't know if that's just that the line went from 8 to 8.5 and then there was enough resistance there that it sort of whipsawed it back the other way. But yeah, it's always confusing to me when I see the numbers kind of all over the place like this. I like the Giants. I think that the Packers win this game, but I think that they win it, you know, within a touchdown. I think anything you can get over a touchdown, it's worth taking those points with the Giants on a neutral field against a Green Bay team that is really seems like they're trying to figure it out, man. I think that Aaron Rodgers is trying to figure out who his receivers are and still hasn't gotten it there. And also, the Giants are, you know, they're the best rushing team in the NFL right now. Saquon Barkley is the best rusher, I should say. Cleveland might be the best overall rushing team, but the Giants have the best running back right now, and they're doing really good on the ground. They're taking interesting chances. They definitely, there's a lot of confidence in that team. So on a neutral field, I'm taking those points. Like I said, if you can get over a touchdown, I think it's a good bet. And 8.5 feels like a gift. I'm definitely going to, when I get off the phone with you, I'm going to go grab that 8.5 at points bet.
Nice. What about the Dolphins, the Finns, and the Jets?
Well, you know, and speaking of a team that's feeling confident, the Jets just, you know, the locker room chemistry there, everything that I've read, it sounds like they're having a good time, they're feeling good, despite the fact that they're not winning, and they are the Jets. those days of the Jets, just the Jets locker room just being a dark place that nobody wanted to go play in. You know, they're like, there's a lot of enthusiasm about the, about Zach under center. You know, he threw some picks, but he also caught a touchdown pass. I don't know if you saw that, but, they ran a trick play and he caught a touchdown pass. And so there's a lot of exciting stuff happening there. And obviously Miami is, you know, we talked about how they're now playing with Teddy Bridgewater, who I have a lot of respect for and think he's a good quarterback. But I do think it's a big drop down from Tua to Teddy Bridgewater. And I think that the drop is big enough that the Jets here. And look, let me just say, I think this is going to be a very close one, because what's the line at right now? 3.5? This is one I'm not going to bet on, because my numbers make it about 3.5. So I think that's a fair number. But I would, if I was forced to bet on it, I'd bet on the Jets at home, just because of the, just for these ephemeral, like, very esoteric reasons. That I think that the Jets feel like, they seem like they have a lot of confidence in Miami. I think losing their quarterback might have their bell rung a little bit. But I think that's a fair number, and I do think that ultimately Miami wins that game, but maybe wins it by a field goal. So it's, the number feels very close, and I think I'm going to avoid betting on that game. But I will be watching that game for sure. I think it's going to be a fun one. I think the Jets are going to try some fun stuff with this new quarterback.
Speaking of locker room chemistry and what seems like the needle having been moved, Doug Peterson apparently has got that team, the Jacksonville, you know, despite getting beat by the Birds Sunday, clearly he's been a terrific choice for, you know, for the Jaguars.
Yeah.
They're giving 7.5 to this Houston team that just feels like a pinata.
Yeah, they are. They're giving 7.5. It's 7 in a lot of places. 7.5 in others. I think the sharpest books have it at 7.5. Around 7, they're laying 7.5 at +108 at Pinnacle. And you know, the Jaguars should win this game. It's just a question of, can they win it, you know, by 2 scores? And I'm not sure that they can. Houston, you know, I think that they're having a lot of struggles, but they've been able to cover the spread this season in some games and play better than what I think the market expects from them. So will this be another one of those games? I don't know. I think this is another one that's close. If I wanted to take Houston, I'd take the 7.5. I'd want the hook on the touchdown there. But again, this number feels kind of close to fair. Jacksonville, I think, can win this game, but I don't know that they can win it by 2 scores.
All right, I'll leave you on the fence on that. Then let's either a favorite that I haven't brought up, or maybe the primetime games Sunday night and Monday night.
Yeah, well, what is the Sunday night game? Which one is Sunday night?
That's the Bengals, which plenty of interest in our listeners in and around Cincy and down through Kentucky. And they're in Baltimore to face the Ravens, and then Las Vegas and Kansas City on Monday night.
You know, I hate to disappoint you, but I like Las Vegas in the Monday night game. I think that, let me see what the spread is right now. 7.5 is a great number, because, again, I think this is a similar situation where, you know, Vegas can put points on the board, and I think that they can figure out a way to cover here against Kansas City. Especially, you know, I think this will be a fun game to watch. I'm glad it's going to be a Monday night. These teams have got a great rivalry. I don't know if you know the story about the Raiders driving the buses around Arrowhead. I mean, these teams, I think in the last 7 times they've played each other, Kansas City has won 6, but the one time that Vegas won, Gruden had them drive the buses around and these, like, do victory laps around the stadium before they left town, and, you know, I don't think Kansas City's ever forgot that. So, you know, there's a good spirited rivalry between these two teams, and they'll play each other hard. The fact that they're in Arrowhead makes me feel like Kansas City's going to, you know, win and keep control of the game. But I think Vegas will bring their A game and put enough points on the board that it's 7.5. I like them. In the Baltimore game, you know, I think that Baltimore wins that game. I think they can win it, and I think they can cover 3 if 3 is still the, yeah, 3 is still the line. I think they cover 3, according to my numbers. And, you know, both of these teams looked good last week, but Baltimore, you know, I have nothing but respect for this team and for this head coach and for the risks they take. There's a lot of debate on Twitter about whether or not it was right to go for the touchdown instead of kicking the field goal. In the fourth quarter, it was definitely the right call to go for the touchdown. You know, all the numbers bear it out. There's really not much difference between getting 3 points and 0 points there if you know that your opponent is going to be able to take the ball down the field from the 20 or the 25. But holding them at the 2 when there's 0 points makes a lot more sense, right? The only reason that the plan didn't work was because of the interception. If it was an incomplete pass and they started on the 2, we would have seen a different result there. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for the fact that they take chances, that they're aggressive, that there's a lot of trust in the team, and there's also a respect for the analytics. So I'm very high on Baltimore, and I think that this will be a statement game for them at home against the Bengals. So, yeah, put me down for Baltimore -3.
You got it. All right. Baltimore, Vegas, Arizona, Carolina, Detroit, Giants, and grudgingly Denver tonight.
No, I don't like that game.
No.
I don't like
that staying
game.
Away. All right. That's fine.
Staying away.
You're entitled. Dave, before we go, gamblers this week kind of shifted gears. Interesting. Seems like an interesting episode.
Yeah, I talked to Richie Sklar. Some of your audience may know this guy because he has some history in the world of horse racing. You know, he's lived many lives, and so racing fans of a certain age may remember him from the 80s. He's maybe one of the most notorious race fixers in the sport. You know, claims that he's fixed hundreds and hundreds of horse races from the harness races all the way up to thoroughbreds. Went to jail for it. And eventually found his way from L.A. to Las Vegas and became one of the most successful golf hustlers in Vegas history and won millions of dollars on the golf courses of Las Vegas from around 2006 to about 2009. He's still there, still playing golf for high money. I think he's lived a very interesting life, and I got a chance to talk with him and play golf with him and tell his story on Gamblers this week.
It's always something fascinating, and I know you can't say too much about it, but how was the blackjack ball?
Well, the blackjack ball was fun. It was, I was honored to get invited to it this year. There was also a number of interesting characters there from the world of horse racing. Bill Benter was there. Yeah, I think I was told there were 3 billionaires at the blackjack ball, which kind of blew my mind. But you know, it was just sort of a lot of fun. There was a blackjack skills competition, and there was a Calcutta auction for that competition. And I was the lowest. I took the lowest amount of money in the Calcutta, which I think is fair. You know, honestly, I think that I was overpaid it in the Calcutta. I think I got like. $700 in the Calcutta. The field got $6,000. So just to give you a sense of the scale there, or the spread, I think $700 might have been overpaying for me. I feel bad for that person that flushed that money down the toilet. But I was, you know, I gave it my best. Blackjack ball's cool. I hope they'll invite me back again next year. I met some really fascinating people. Maybe I can get some of them on Gamblers next season.
We're counting on it. Dave, thanks so much. You're the second. This is an unusual boast. You're the second Hot Springs resident today, because Tim Martin, who's got this crazy fast Iowa bred, joined us, and all the Martin, all the training Martins were on earlier.
Well, we'll take Suey to that horse, and yeah, I'm glad to help hold it down for Hot Springs on your show.
Always. Dave Hill, everybody, Dave Hill 77 on your Twitter, and I will send out the link to Gamblers this week, as well as the New York Times analysis from Dave for week 5 of the NFL. And Dave joins us every Thursday for these plays, and he's still well ahead even after the 4 and 5 week. We got about 15 minutes to close out the morning. It's been hectic, but we'll finish strong with Schapp. We'll get Scott Shapiro in here, and Scott will give you the lay of the land for Keeneland coverage on Twin Spires and BrizNet ahead of tomorrow's opening day, and we'll get some opinions. Speaking of opinions, we'll talk to Popo tomorrow. Haven't in the short week, so we didn't get to Popo earlier in the week, and I did tweet the 3 stakes glances, the snapshots from Form to Win. They're up already. So, and a reminder too, Gus will join us tomorrow with some weekend opinions, and his analysis will be at BrizNet as well. For the spotlight selections, Gus Alonzo, of course, longtime house handicapper for At the Races from day one, the original. The original is still the greatest. We're going to be hard pressed, I think, to get to Seth. In fact, I know we're going to be hard pressed. And I have not been able, with the kind of morning we've had, I have not been able to look at the changes on the scratches. So I'll make the changes as quickly as I can. I mean, we've got time because 212 is the first post for the first leg of the pick six. $71,000 pick six carryover at Belmont at Aqueduct today. Scott Shapiro is standing by. Schapp, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you, sir?
Excellent, and Gamar Tov to you and yours. Scott, Keeneland kicks off tomorrow, and there seems to be, obviously the added intrigue with the Breeders' Cup going to be conducted there a month later, weeks later, and let's give everybody the plan available at Twin Spires and BrizNet, because you're gonna hyper-cover it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We'll have the PPs available, as always, on BrizNet, as well as daily selections and the Kentucky Handicapper sheet. Then we have all, obviously, wagers available at Twin Spires, and a new promotion called the Daily Double Down. It's a obviously daily doubles is what it involves. Every race, every day at the meet, you have to opt in like always. And if you hit at least 2 daily doubles on a card, you unlock a 50% bonus on all winning daily double wagers that day. So you could, you hit 2, you get the 50%, but the more you can keep playing them, and you get up to 50%. And, we talked about it a couple of weeks back, Steve, just in general, that, oftentimes it's a difficult endeavor to hit pick 4s and pick 5s. And when you look at these first couple of cards at Keeneland, it's even that much more challenging. So cutting back to daily doubles might be an advisable strategy if you don't have real strong opinions to lean on in the sequences. And what better way to do so when you get 50% bonuses? So check out that offer, twinspires.com/offers, or on the offers tab on the app. But a new fun promotion that we're running.
I like that, and a lot of times the various bonuses offered to Inspires, there's been the 10% bonuses on pick 4s, basically going a long way to neutralize takeout or slash it, and there's so many ways to shop around and find opportunities, in terms of enhancing your return and helping your bankroll churn, and you'd be surprised. I mean, if we talk about this with contest play, playing free contests and playing $7 qualifiers, and it doesn't have to You know, not everybody can throw big numbers at against whatever kind of multi-wagers. So every little bit helps, I guess, is the message here. Let's get some ideas, Shap, too, about your general Keeneland approach for the fall. Any nuance or difference between spring and fall when you're looking at Keeneland?
I mean, I think it's a case-by-case basis. You know, obviously, with the stakes races and the Breeders' Cup being there, that adds some interesting options. You know, the win and you're in, you're going to want to win. But some of these guys, you know, also could be using these to kind of just tune up for the big races. Always a track, Stephen. I don't have specific data, spring to fall per se, but it seems like a track that for the most part plays, you know, towards biases at times. We see inside speed biases at times, but there's been a number of meets where I can remember outside and off the pace. A couple years back, the year British Idiom won the Alcibiades was, you know, a year where it felt like everything was coming from outside and off the pace, kind of like what we saw for a few days at Churchill. So nothing specific that I, look for from spring to fall, other than the fact that the two-year-old races to me are much more enticing, you know, those 4.5 furlong races that usually Wesley Ward dominates and, you know, really just about getting out of the gate in many ways. Now you've got, you know, seasoned two-year-old horses with either races under their belt or steady series of work, some of the barn better horses that they're unleashing for the first or second time. So those are a little more compelling to me, but kind of have to wait and see for the biases, but generally Keeneland seems to be a track that you can take advantage of biases one way or another.
Well, let's take advantage of a couple of thoughts about tomorrow. Maybe the stakes, maybe just even the stakes action.
Sounds good. The stakes action starts in race 7 with the Phoenix, and let's be honest, this is not the strongest, this race isn't the strongest Phoenix we'll see, and I think in large part, it's because it's not the strongest division we'll see for the sprint, for the sprinters. You know, last year, Special Reserve won this race, and he held off Aloha West, who came back and won the Breeders' Cup sprint. He's a deserving top choice in here, but he doesn't come into this race nearly in the same form that he did last year for Mike Maker. That being said, I think he's the one to beat. He's got an affinity for this racetrack. He's got the win in the Phoenix last year and a second in the Commonwealth earlier on in the year. And it just seems like the plan this year for Mike Maker and his crew was to win the Breeders' Cup sprint, where he was a little bit over the top last year when he battled early and tired late to finish fourth. Now, the first two efforts of his campaign were in the off-going in the Mid-Atlantic. Won one of those two races, just an average effort in terms of Brisnet speed ratings for him, 97, but he's been freshened up, and I don't think he has all that much to beat. I mean, he's got Necker Island to beat, who just finished third, blanket finish in the Louisville Thoroughbred Society, but he loves Churchill, wasn't able to get the job done there, and now tries Keeneland for the first time. And then Sibelius is intriguing, shipping in for Jeremiah O'Dwyer, the last two or three efforts, probably win this race, but, you know, it's been a tough three races. He doesn't get LASIK for the first time in a while, and I'm just concerned about regression. So not real creative 2.65 for me, but a little bit of an underwhelming rendition of the race, but I think those are the three, and the morning line agrees with me, unfortunately.
Well, sometimes that's just that's what you got to deal with. I'm kind of rooting for Jerry O'Dwyer here with Sibelius. That's again a nice story to to get Jerry to and certainly certainly this horse has earned his way. So kind of rooting there a little bit. The Jessamine, always a fun group, and no exception here. And the fact that Towhead is made the 9-2 second choice and Delight, the 4-1 favorite, kind of gives you an indication. Nick Tamaro, by the way, doing the morning line at Keeneland. And so Nick is basically projecting that this is a hyper-competitive group.
Man, is this one a tough race, and it looks like there's a lot of speed in here. You know, some horses stretching out, some horses that have that have shown speed going two turns. And I'm looking for the horse that's going to get the right trip. Toehead, you mentioned, who has been tough luck, daughter of Malibu Moon, won that non-wagering event, the no contest, earlier on in the Saratoga meet, and then most recently in the Juvenile Fillies, took a nose beat to in the $500,000 event over the yielding going at Keeneland, Kentucky Downs. I was not sure that Delight was going to be the favorite, and excited to see, you know, have Nick doing the line there, one of the best in the game in many ways. But I do like the way the race sets up for Delight as one of the logicals in here. I thought the race two back at Saratoga when she finished third was a really encouraging effort. She was wide throughout and finished losing the pink hue, got a good trip first-time starter for Chad Brown. And Kijera, who we'll talk about in a moment, and the Alcibiades, who came back to win awesomely, and then really took advantage of a good trip against a lighter field at Delaware. I think she'll get a good pocket trip. And for those looking for a bigger price, I pick number 11, Knock Your Socks Off, for second, a horse that I think will hopefully be able to take advantage of a contentious early pace. Got a nice mid-pack trip at Colonial and the maiden-breaking performance. We'll need to run faster than that, but I like the way she did it. And then exits that Juvenile Fillies when she was well off the pace in that race I just spoke of with Toehead, but was dominated by those on the front end. So I think she offers some solid value, but there's very, very little that would surprise me in this race. But I'm going to play it to assume that there's going to be a little bit of pace to chase in here, and hopefully we can get number 11, Knock Your Socks Off, into the number.
And I'm taking the same kind of approach, but except I'll take it with the ground-saving Sabalenka down inside for Whit Beckman, who we talked to, of course, just last week, and 10-1 with Jose Ortiz. Let's we got about a minute to look at the Alcibiades.
Yeah, I'm going to go with another absolutely difficult race, but I love the way Kajira did it last time out for Phil Bauer at an awesome Saratoga. I don't think she's a turf horse necessarily. I think he just wanted her to get the two turns. The pedigree, very versatile, buys Nyquist out of a Black Tie Affair mare. And just love the professionalism she showed in that second start. I think she gets a perfect pressing trip in what is another absolutely wide open stakes event.
Yeah, this is a fun group. And, there's Pat Biancone showing up. Patrick comes up from Florida with an interesting player in Infinite Diamond, the B jersey, and boy, that would be, I'm sure Sid and Mr. Fipke here are rooting. If Mr. Fipke bred this filly that was $120,000 purchase at OBS April, certainly got an interest in happy to see the DJ team, John and Len Green, with Wonder Wheel, who's done little wrong, got beaten the spin away, but feels like she is kind of rebooted here for this opportunity. And, of course, McPeak, the conversation we had with Kenny, fun and feisty, stepping forward in the Pocahontas. This is a very, very good Alcibiades. Chap will be following along. We'll talk tomorrow as well, you and James, and Marty McGee with Keeneland coverage for us tomorrow. And best of luck if you're doing anything in New York today, but we will talk to you tomorrow as well.
Sounds good. Good to get it rolling, and I look forward to chatting again tomorrow, Steve.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Chap, 34. This was a size 12 show in a size 10.5 shoe. Tim Martin with a really one of those conversations I just keep going because it was so much fun to talk to him about Tyler's Tribe, and along with Cody's Wish, going to be one of the really nice human interest stories at the Breeders' Cup. Mary Rampolini got us started with our DRF coverage for the Breeders' Cup, and PMAC stopped by, Pat McKenna, Sean Clancy. We went over the fences with Sean and David Hill with the NFL coverage out of the New York Times, and Scott Schapp. So apologies to anybody we couldn't get to today, which was a considerable. Tony and Seth and Rich Hay. Back tomorrow for the big Twin Spires weekend preview edition of At the Races. I will make the changes to this New York pick six and get it up on the website. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding programs.